Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 31st day of August. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Mike Tenura will join us too. As usual, he's up at T-Storm in Chicago, Illinois. Along the way, we'll hear all about IBRL. That's bioprocessing. Take it ethanol research on the University of Illinois campus and a brand new construction contract and plant that we've got in place. And we'll hear yesterday's interview that I did with Mike Conaway. He's the chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, along with Rodney Davis, representative from the state of Illinois on the House Ag Committee, and G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania. It all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's what the numbers look like in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon, and these are not the settlement prices, but closes or thereabouts, up 11 and a quarter cents for the September corn at $3.40 and three quarters. December 356 and a half, 11 higher. The March at 369, up 10 and three quarters. July at 382 and three quarters, up 10 and a half cents. Again, these are not closes, but trades just around, 10 after the hour of 1 o'clock. September soybeans up 15 and three quarters at the end of the trade of the day at 938 and three quarters. November at 946 and a half, 13 and a quarter higher. January at 956, up 13. And the March contract up 13 and a quarter at 965 and a half. July up 13 and three quarters at 981 and a half. Bean oil futures 34.77, up about 44 cents. Bean meal $2.40 higher or thereabouts. Wheat futures in the July contract up a nickel for the soft red at 483 and a half. And the hard red in the July at 484 and a quarter, four and three quarters higher. Live cattle futures, August contract, these are settlement prices, down a buck, 2 and a half. At $104.52 and a half, feeder cattle at $142.72 and a half, down 17 and a half cents. And lean hogs for the day finished $61.40, up a nickel on the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Thanks to all of those who have visited us on the Farm Progress Show site. I'll be back in studio tomorrow. Don't forget to tune in for Commodity Week. We'll have a great show for you this afternoon up on the web at willag.org.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to helping farm families succeed by offering financial products and services geared specifically to agriculture and rural communities, and developing partnership-based relationships with its member owners.
Here are some of the other trades at this hour in Chicago. October crude oil at $47.31 a barrel, $1.36 higher. Ethanol futures up a nickel and 7 cents at $1.54 and 6 cents. Heating oil or diesel at $1.67 and a tenth. That's rallied 8 and 7 tenths of a cent for the day. September gasoline up 28 and 2 tenths. That, of course, a response to what's been happening in Houston and the capacity that's been diminished by Harvey at $2.16 and 6 tenths of a cent. October in the natural gas up 9 and 8 tenths at $3.03 and 7 tenths of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average for the day at 21,921 is up 50 points. The U.S. dollar at 92.685, down 0.138. And gold futures on the afternoon at $1,316, up $7.90. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. We'll drop to a low of 54 degrees under some clouds. Tomorrow for Friday, partly cloudy skies, a high of just 71 degrees. Winds out of the northeast tomorrow. They'll be pretty runny at 15 to 25 miles an hour. Partly cloudy skies on Friday night. We'll drop to 47 for football. Should be a great night. Northeast winds at 10 to 15. And that'll bring us sunny skies on Saturday. We'll go to a high of 78 degrees. Mainly clear on Saturday night. We'll drop back to 56. And on Sunday, sunny skies and 85 degrees. To finish out Sunday night, 62. Winds out of the southwest by then at 5 to 10 miles an hour. We'll talk with Mike Tenura and take a complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Thursday afternoon. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason on the Farm Progress Show site. Let's check in now with Dan Zwicker. He's in Waco, Texas, and I suppose far enough north that he's not terribly impacted by Harvey, but I know you've got some family that was in Houston. Everybody's safe there, I take it, Dan.
Yes, I got a daughter and son-in-law that live in the western suburbs by Katy, we talked them into it a week ago, Friday morning, to get their rear ends up here. I told them, so you guys don't, and this is when they were just forecasting 24 inches of rain. I said, you don't know what 24 inches of rain is going to do in that flatland down there. And instead they got 40 inches of rain, but we feel very fortunate that their subdivision was one of the subdivisions that did escape the flooding, so they're going to be able to go back to their house and try to get things back to normal. But overall, Houston is not going to go back to normal for a long time, and the school districts, they may not get open for another couple weeks yet. A lot of the schools are flooded too, so it's going to be a long haul for that Houston area, but we're happy and tickled to death that at least my family is safe. I got two dogs and a horse up here on the ranch. So.
Well, keep them all safe there. Hey, so let's turn our attention very quickly to the commodity markets, because we finished up today, at least. We're on, what, the 31st of August, so this is kind of that last day where we go from old crop to new crop, and we do the transition, and sometimes, I guess, the market says, okay, we got everything we're going to buy done. Is that what happened today? Because the market's higher for both corn and soybeans.
Yeah, I think there's several things. Number one, we did have a good round of weekly export sales for the new crop on corn and soybeans today. The other thing is the market was terribly oversold after the decline that we had here during the month of August, basically since the crop report. And this is the last day of the month, so a lot of times people will take their profits on the last day of the month, and then they'll go home for Labor Day weekend, and then after Labor Day weekend, they'll start looking whether or not they want to buy it or sell it again. So I think and then farmers that were maybe dragging their feet to the last minute to roll their September basis contracts to December and or cash them out, and or cash out the inventory that was in commercial storage. A lot of those factors kind of came together a day or two earlier this year. And it kind of looks like we're making the same kind of low that we did a year ago. We made a low on August 31st. Corn, while we're not only up for the day, we have been able to basically pull ourselves back to unchanged for the week, and as we do this reporting, we're a little bit higher for the week. If we would be able to close that out higher, that would be a strong indication to me that maybe this market has at least found a temporary bottom, and we're going to begin to consolidate, and then they'll start waiting on hearing yields, actual yields coming out of the field, and determine whether or not these crop surveys and USDA's numbers are actually, you know, on target or so. So soybeans are having a good day also here today. We got the November bean contract up sharply. We're doing, let's see here, let me take a look here. And I do think, just looking at eyeballing it, I think we might end up maybe even with a higher weekly close on soybeans. We're real close anyway. We've kind of come back to unchanged. So that is a strong signal too. I think if we can close out this week of August unchanged to higher, that puts us on pretty good footing as we go into September. Now, the thing that we got to keep in mind, September is a very dominantly seasonally down month. But a lot of times when the bearishness comes early in August, September will kind of be on the upswing. And a lot of that will depend upon how harvest comes and what the yields shake out to be. I think most people kind of feel that maybe USDA may pull back on some of their August numbers on the September report. But that's what it kind of looks like to me, that we've pretty well priced in the bearishness of a big crop. And now we're just going to wait around to see whether or not that's going to be realized, or maybe that's going to be a trim back some. And any trimming back, while it would not necessarily be wildly bullish, it would be at least supportive to more of a sideways type market, maybe a sideways higher type market.
Well, Dan, glad that you were able to join us today, that you and your family are safe, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Very well, Todd.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. We're here on the Farm Progress Show site. Yesterday, we were visited in the U of I tent by the chairman of the House Ag Committee, Mike Conaway, and of course, Rodney Davis, who is from the state of Illinois, serves on the Ag Committee, and G.T. Thompson, who is with Pennsylvania. And they want to talk a little bit, or at least I do, about what you heard here in the state of Illinois. Start with crop insurance. What are the things you heard from farmers today?
Don't screw it up.
What does that mean to you?
It means that the program is working. One of the other fellas says six words: crop insurance, safety net, no changes. So the crop insurance program is vital. The public-private partnership that has been so successful since the early 80s has got to continue. Little disappointed in what the GAO came out with, saying that there need to be changes to it. The one issue that would refute what GAO said is that if it were that profitable, you would have insurance companies fighting to get into the market. Instead, we have insurance companies fleeing the market because they can't make the money they need to make. So there's something out of whack with what GAO did. We'll try to reconcile the reality of what is crop insurance with what GAO came up with. But from my perspective, it's a program that works. It's vital to the safety net. And doing no harm to crop insurance is a big deal.
Yeah, the secretary often says do no harm. I wonder what that means in context of taking cottonseed into the oilseed side, and you have to shift some money somewhere.
Well, that's that was not crop insurance. That would be moving cottonseed and cotton into Title I, which is a different circumstance. We already have a cotton program in this insurance that's called Stacks. It didn't work. The idea of doing a farm bill every 5 years is you get to jettison the things that don't work, and you take in things that do, or make some changes, and that's what will happen with this farm bill. So crop insurance is a bit unrelated to moving cotton and cottonseed into Title I.
Well, I may do something that is related to crop insurance. So the harvest price option, is that something you have to reconsider?
Well, every piece of it should be examined and looked at, and that's clearly one of those. But it's simply replacement insurance. You've got an opportunity to buy replacement insurance at your home, as opposed to what your home cost originally, those kind of things. So it's a program that does work, and before we start willy-nilly making changes to it, we need to understand all the ramifications to it and why it's an important program to the folks that use that issue. And we shouldn't be afraid to have those conversations to let these programs stand on their own.
Representative Davis, what did you hear today?
You know, I heard a lot of what I heard at the same listening session I went to with these two guys in Texas and one in Minnesota. You know, it's an opportunity for ag as a nation to come together, and really the consistency of messaging at all of the listening sessions I've been at, I think allows us to write better policies. Chairman Conaway has entrusted GT and I to chair a couple of his subcommittees. I heard a lot of advice about the research title, and we're here at the U of I tent, and we know how important the ag research title is, Title VII, to the University of Illinois and other land-grant institutions and non-land-grant institutions through NIFA grants. But I will tell you, we heard a lot about nutrition too, and that's a subcommittee I serve on with G.T. Thompson, who chairs that, and that's 80% of the farm bill. And we can't forget about addressing hunger needs, and that's exactly why I'm glad these two guys were here in Central Illinois today.
So I did want to talk to you, Representative Thompson, about these food and nutrition programs, SNAP, WIC, those sorts of programs that make up 80% of the budget. What did you hear that excited you today from Richland College here in the state of Illinois?
Well, I think first of all, we heard a great example that could be replicated probably hundreds of thousands of times, where a person who found themselves in difficult straits and struggling financially, probably living in poverty circumstances, wanting to pull themselves up
with a child,
with a young child, and wanted to seek greater opportunity. The SNAP program was one of those things that helped her through that. And so, we also heard just a unified support, not just from the number of people that were here, from the food banks that are really doing the Lord's work of making sure that our neighbors that are struggling have access to the food that they have, but from the growers, from the farmers, from the ranchers who were there. It was a unified, very positive support whenever somebody stood up and spoke about the importance of SNAP, TFAB, which is the support that we do for our food banks, the commodities program that helps a lot of senior citizens. It was just very impressive.
This is a very difficult balancing act, but politically it needs to be done. How do you bring in the urban representatives, both on the Senate and the House, along with those rural representatives to make it happen, to balance the urban and the rural sides?
The real issue is that the Farm Bill delivers, the farming community, excuse me, the production agriculture delivers the most abundant, safest, and affordable food and fiber supply of any developed nation in the world. This is a pocketbook issue for every American who eats. They get a deal when they go to the grocery store. They don't know it, and they don't know why. And so everybody in America eats. They ought to be all supportive of the Farm Bill, because you can love it or hate it, but it delivers that affordable food supply that we all enjoy every single day. So it's a pocketbook issue. We just need to help people understand why it's so important. The silver lining in this dark cloud that is what's happened in Texas is it shows just why we need crop insurance, the safety net already in place, so that it's not a knee-jerk reaction. It's something they can count on. They know it's going to be there. It's not emotional. It's just this is a safety net that's there. So I think we'll be able to pivot off of the wreck that isn't going on in Texas right now to help our colleagues understand why important it is.
That's Mike Conaway, chairman of the House Agriculture Committee. He and Rodney Davis from Illinois and Representative G.T. Thompson from Pennsylvania were on the Farm Progress Show site yesterday. You know, here at the Farm Progress Show, we've had a stage for the last 3 days, and one of the folks that's been getting up and talking to the audiences that have been attending is Vijay Singh. He's the director of IBRL, that's the Integrated Bioprocessing Research Lab, and we're going to take some time now to understand just exactly what this is. It's a brand new building, relatively speaking, because it's still under construction on campus in the south part of campus, the ag area. What is IBRL?
Sure. So as you said, IBRL stands for Integrated Bioprocessing Research Lab. The mission of IBRL is to bring innovations in industrial biotech area closer to commercialization. The overall industrial biotech is growing in the United States, and at University of Illinois, about 200 to 250 invention disclosures are filed every year related to industrial biotech or life sciences. And a very small percent of that actually converts into patent applications, and then even fewer get licensed. And one of the reason for that is that we are not able to showcase these technologies at a bigger scale or do proof of concept at a scale bigger than a bench scale. And that's what IBRL is expected to do, is to bring a lot of these technologies closer to commercialization, which would lead to more economic activity in the state of Illinois and beyond.
Let me take you back a couple of years, maybe a decade or so, and talk about some of the things that have been developed so we can get an idea where I think IBRL is headed. You had a graduate student, I know, that was working with Red Dye. Maybe you can update us on that one. And then there was a time early on in your career that you had a bolt-on for the front end of an ethanol plant that made them more efficient. So these are the kinds of things we're talking about?
Absolutely. So the Red Dye project you're talking about is a project that was funded by Kraft, and that was to replace some of the pigments that are being used in food products with some of the natural colors. We were trying to do that in corn. So IBRL helped doing some of the pilot scale work that we needed to do in order to prove that this works. We can recover these dyes, or not dyes, these natural colors from corn. And so we had all this capability already on our campus, you know, to do scale-up work. But now IBRL will going to allow us to consolidate all that capability at one place, plus add additional capabilities for us to do work at a scale bigger than bench scale. So we can generate large amounts of products, enough product that we can give it out for testing into different products and things like that. So that's the whole concept of IBRL.
So essentially we have a building and a director that's looking to use that building as a pilot plant for many different types of products.
Correct. It's not just for U of I work or research work, but we also plan to work very closely with industry. A lot of industrial partners need to try out their processes at a bigger scale. Sometimes they are working with products that are not yet approved, so they have to be in a confined area where they can do this work, and then after you're done, you get your engineering data, you have to get rid of all that material, destroy it. So we are at a scale where that allows you to do that. It's not like a big pilot plant where you're generating like tons and tons of material and then it becomes a problem trying to get rid of that. We are working, our biggest fermenter is going to be about 300 liters. So, and processing close to about a bushel of corn, you know, about 25 kilograms of corn, yeah.
Do we have an end of construction date or a grand opening site time or close to a time that we might be able to expect IBRL to be open and for business?
Yeah, so we are getting very close. The building is expected to be ready sometime in spring of next year. So sometime in late spring or early fall is when we plan to do the grand opening.
And finally, just one last question. Are there product lines that will be the first to come through the system?
So already, you know, there are some projects that we have lined up with some of our industrial partners. In addition, we have some big grants that were just recently, given to University of Illinois. We have one from Department of Energy that is to develop the next generation of biofuels and bioproducts. We have one other NSF grant and another DOE science grant. So all these grants will require some scale-up work, some proof of concept work, which we expect to do at IBRL.
And before I let you go, you did say that this would be good news for corn growers in the state of Illinois. What do you mean?
Yeah, so, you know, in order to do this industrial biotech, and when I say industrial biotech, the main process that we are talking about is fermentation. In order to drive this industrial biotech engine, you need large amounts of cheap carbon. And for the United States, that's corn. Corn beats a lot of other sugar crops hands down, so we'll need lots of corn to do this, to create all these biopolymers, organic acids, industrial enzymes, and so that's a good news for corn growers. This is something which we consider beyond ethanol. That means the next ethanol that we expect to happen here in Illinois and United States.
Well, good luck for good luck. Well, good luck in all of the work, and thanks for taking part. Good Lord. Good luck with all the work, and thanks for taking time with me today.
Thank you, Todd.
And, of course, is Vijay Singh. He is the director of IBRL on the south end of campus at the University of Illinois. That's the Integrated Bioprocessing Research Lab.
It's National Trail Mix Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1742, a plague of grasshoppers destroyed crops in Pennsylvania. In 1836, African-American inventor Henry Blair was issued a patent for a cottonseed planter. By the way, his patents were signed with a simple X because he had not learned to read or write. In 1900, Sir John Bennett Laws died, an English agronomist. He founded the artificial fertilizer industry. Together with Sir Joseph Gilbert, they conducted agricultural experiments at Rothamsted Experimental Station, the oldest agricultural research station in the world. They are considered the founding fathers of agricultural sciences. In 1900, Coca-Cola went on sale for the first time in Britain. In 1921, the first successful demonstration of an aerial crop dusting was performed in Ohio by Lieutenant John A. McCready. He was flying a Curtiss JN6H, most fondly known as the Flying Jenny. In 1960, the National Agricultural Center and Hall of Fame was established. And in 1995, the summer was so hot in Missouri that at the end of August, methane gas emitted within large bales of freshly cut hay began to spontaneously combust. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services created specifically for the cooperative's member owners to meet the needs of rural America, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, point-of-sale financing, and risk management options, helping farm families succeed today and tomorrow.
This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. I'm UofI Extension's Todd Gleason on the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur. We're joined now by Mike Tenori. He's in Chicago at T-Storm Weather. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Let's start with what's happening in the southern coast states and the problems that Harvey may be creating for producers all along that area. What have you been learning?
Well, for the most part, the soybeans in Louisiana have missed out on the very heavy rainfall. Our proprietary analysis showed that 22% of soybean production in Louisiana received at least 6 inches of rain over the last 2 weeks. So 22% of soybeans in Louisiana are in trouble, but that also means that 78% received quite a bit less than that. And keep in mind that Louisiana in general is only around 1.5% of U.S. soybean production. So thus far, Louisiana has been spared by Harvey. Harvey is now moving on to the north and east, and the soybeans in the rest of the Delta are finally starting to see some rain. That began yesterday in parts of Arkansas, but essentially began in earnest overnight and this morning. We're now seeing heavy rain across much of eastern Arkansas, extending into parts of Tennessee, Kentucky, far southeast Missouri, and even parts of Mississippi. So this Delta region is going to receive a big rain here over the next 1 to 2 days. Totals will end up between 3 and 6 inches, but we won't see totals much higher than that based on what we can see right now.
From the deep south, let's move to the northern parts of the Corn Belt. Do we have concerns about cold weather at all next week?
Well, there will be a cold snap Monday and Tuesday, but until we get there, temperatures will gradually warm up, especially once Harvey completely exits the Corn Belt later on this weekend. So temperatures will pop back into the 70s and 80s across a big area late in the holiday weekend. Again, it does turn colder Monday and Tuesday. Now, we should see a little bit of frost in some of these far northern growing areas next week. Minimum temperatures probably falling into the mid-30s from eastern North Dakota through parts of Minnesota and Wisconsin. We need to be below 32 degrees to really have a lot of concern. And at this point, it looks like only a glancing blow of coolness will occur. So that should allow the growing season to continue. And there will not be much rain anywhere across the central U.S. Beyond what's occurring right now over the next 10 to 14 days. So high and dry, gradually turning warmer, a little bit of a cool down next week. But the first 10 to 14 days of September at this point look very dry, unusually dry, but that will help out farmers with their drying situation, of course.
Here on the Farm Progress Show site, I had a group of Brazilian producers that were in to talk to us for a little bit. Because they're here, I assume that it's pretty early to be talking about weather conditions there. Is that true?
If you think about Brazil's climate, you'll recall that it has a distinct dry season and a distinct rainy season. We're still in that dry season. The rainy season does not typically begin until maybe late September, more so in October, and then especially in November and December.
That's Mike Tenora. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural weather on WILL comes from Busey, empowering individuals with financial education through their Resource Center. For online calculators, planning checklists, and articles, visit Busey.com. Busey, your dream, our promise.